CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Friday morning, CliffCentral.com. We are here, we are live, and we're ready for the weekend. I hope you are. Sure. Yes, sis. All right, we've got a busy show lined up for you today. We've got lots of cool things happening. Let me give you a little menu of what's coming up. It's going to be fun. We've got a couple of cool guests joining us. Ben will be on with me in the next little while. We've got some headlines, obviously, for you. And talk to Stavel Mark, who I think you might remember from a long while ago on the show. Stavel is an international model. He's an actor. He's an author. He's a photographer. And I actually want to talk to him because it's been 21 years ago that as a teenager with one bag, one measly bag, this guy came to South Africa and started a life, essentially. He had $50 in his pocket, and he told the story on a social media post that he put up. He put up a video on YouTube. And I just thought, you know, this guy is actually quite inspiring. And even though I've met him before and we've spoken to him before on the show, I thought it might be cool to have Stavel on because he's a really, really cool dude. He's got such a cool take on life. He's a very optimistic, fun guy, believes in his dreams. He lives his dreams. And I think people like that deserve a whole lot of attention from us because they're the ones who turn ideas and dreams into reality. And there are a few of them. You know, there are only a few in the world. Unfortunately, and I include myself in this sometimes, lots of us have lots of ideas, right? We have, you know, great ideas about businesses, great ideas about what we're going to do with our lives, where we're going to go, what we'll build, who we'll meet, the kinds of things we'll end up achieving. I remember when I was, 22, 23, I thought, oh, I better hurry up because by 28, I'm going to be married with three kids. That was my... I thought that was going to be the plan. And 28 rolled by and I wasn't, you know? So I don't know what that means in terms of achievement, but I certainly didn't feel like I'd achieved enough by the age of 28. And I felt, you know, I always compare myself in that case to like the great people of history, like Alexander the Great, who by 33 had conquered the known world. You know, you suddenly think, well, by comparison, I'm a bit of a loser. Anyway, we'll speak to Stavel Mark a little bit later on. I had a very busy day yesterday, which I'll tell you about in a second, but I want to go to the comments. Tatleho says, struggling to defrost this morning. I couldn't die peacefully in my sleep. I want to scream. Good morning. Yeah, dude, listen, I mean, I feel your pain. Oh, waking up in winter is not fun. And we don't have to talk about this all day, I promise you, but it is something to think about. Salut Sama from Michael Pfister, who's getting hold of us from Switzerland this morning. Ruth says, busy weekend of birthday parties happening. Hopefully warmer weather and next week is a short week. Woo! Oh, yes, of course. We've got the 16th of June, Youth Day, which is Thursday next week. We've got off. So there won't be a burning platform, and Pumi won't be on the show next week then. But otherwise, things will be as usual. Yonda says, good morning, Cliff Centralians, and those who are not turned tuned. I don't know. It's Friday. Let's make this one better than the last. Cool. Gary says, are you getting sick again? No. Why? Do I look like I'm sick? That worries me. Thanks, Gary. Now I've started the morning badly. All right, we want to hear from you. Doing my first international travel this coming week since COVID, says Venetia. Traveling to India. Nice. Yeah, I did mine in March, and I have to tell you, I don't think the world is ready yet for travel. There's still too much bullshit. I think it's definitely eased up since March, even more. But March was too... There's still too much nonsense, especially in the airports, especially in America's airports. I'll tell you, that's nothing you want to find yourself in yet. Until they've stopped all their nonsense, I'm just not traveling for a little while. Anyway, yesterday, speaking of international travel, I did a bit of a whirlwind diplomatic tour yesterday. You know, I've got a few friends who I've maintained friendships with for a very long time in, you know, various parts of Pretoria and the diplomatic corps and all the rest of it. So I stay in league with them. They're really interesting people. I get to speak to ambassadors, and I get to hear what they think of South Africa, and I get to hear what, you know, what they think of their own countries. And it's interesting to me. I keep in touch with these people because their whole job is to maintain trade relations, maintain good diplomatic relations, try to understand what's going on in South Africa, try to understand what's going on in their own country, and communicate between the two. So I found it interesting that yesterday I was invited to the 74th, I said 75th, but it was the 74th birthday of Israel, Israeli Independence Day, which is a really, really interesting thing. I mean, even if, and there are lots of people in South Africa who are not big fans of Israel. So I understand that, you know, there are differing opinions on this, and people tend to be very polarized about the issue of Israel, just like they're very polarized about, you know, North Korea or America or Britain, for that matter. Everybody tends to think that the countries that they like, for whatever reasons, political, economic, social, maybe you like their... You like their prime minister or their president. That's enough for you. But I went along to Israel's independence celebrations at the Pretoria Israeli embassy. And it was really cool. I saw lots of people there that I knew. They sang the anthems, which is always always cool because everybody stands to attention. And the Israeli ambassador said some very cool things. He said, for example, I thought this was an interesting thing that he said. He said, you don't have to be, you know, pro-Israel or pro-Palestine. You can be both. Like, you can want both to be happy and successful. And I thought that was such a good point. I wonder, of course, whether the Palestinian representatives of South Africa would say the same thing. But it's interesting how much progress is actually being made in that part of the world, because Israel has opened up diplomatic relations with the UAE, with Bahrain. They're starting to talk to Sudan. They've already got an improvement in relations when it comes to Jordan and Egypt. So there are lots of things happening that are actually extremely positive in that part of the world, I think. And I mean, I certainly hope you would think so too. I had to do a little mid-morning. You know how the nose... I've worked this out, by the way. Unless I wake up at 4:30, this is what happens. It takes my head, my nose, my sinuses, like a fucking hour to sort themselves out in the morning when I've woken up. So sorry about that, but that's the way it goes for winter. Anyway, so the Israeli embassy and Israel celebrating 74 years, very, very special. And I wholeheartedly send my congratulations and my support to the people of Israel and to the South African Jewish community who support Israel so strongly. You know, we've got a very good, strong, dedicated, devoted lobby of people who keep Israel front and center in the news. And I think that deserves enormous congratulations because it flies in the face of enormous government hostility to Israel, which is just so bizarre to me. So good luck, Israel, and keep on working on the relations with those neighbors of yours who, you know, up to just a few years ago, they hated Israel so much that the only solution in their minds was, you know, Israel must be wiped out. Now you have open diplomatic relations with the UAE, with Bahrain, and with many other countries. It's starting to happen with Morocco. So this is good news. We should all be very, very pleased with that. I'd also say that there's such a welcoming atmosphere. By the way, I saw Herman Mashaba there, which was cool. I had a long chat to him. Now, I'm going to get him on the Burning Platform sometime soon, but I also want to get Herman's candidate for Gauteng Premier, because, of course, they're contesting the upcoming provincial and local elections too. And Herman is going to put forward a very, very cool guy, Baloyi, who's Baloyi Modise, I think his name is. He, a very interesting dude. He actually was the DA guy for Midvale, and he switched over to Herman, which is another interesting thing. I wonder if the DA knows about that, or whether they saw that coming. Certainly they know about it now, but whether they saw that coming, because Herman is slowly operating in the background and making things happen. And I feel like even people who don't like Herman have to give him a bit of a begrudging respect. Anyway, the other thing is that I went straight from that to the British High Commission, the High Commissioner's residence, where they had a birthday party or a Platinum Jubilee celebration for the Queen, which was quite cool. I mean, that all happened, obviously, in England over the weekend in London. But, well, all over the UK, actually. But they had a little party for a whole lot of sort of friends of the British High Commission there as well. So that was quite cool. They had to change the tie, but otherwise kept everything the same. And went and joined a whole bunch of people there. It was very cool. There's a group of singers who are actually a bit an offshoot of the Soweto Gospel Choir called Africa's Soul. And they are superb. Really, really talented singers. They did both versions of, they did the British anthem and then they did the South African one, both beautifully sung. And then they did some music afterwards too, which was really, really good. So some terrific, terrific people wandering around there, some great entertainment, some excellent gin and tonic, it has to be said. I think one of the sponsors there was Diageo, so they brought along Tanqueray and a whole lot of other great gins. So some very cool stuff happening there. And just a nice day. It's good to see people doing normal things. No one wore masks. You know, they're walking around. It's the middle of winter, and the weather was beautiful. Yesterday afternoon, I looked at Pretoria, because certainly the British High Commissioner's residence is perched on the hill in Waterkloof, and you just get to look right over the city of Pretoria, which just looks fantastic. I know I'm biased. I was born here. I grew up here. But I just love it. I really do. Christine says, great news. No signs of protests in or near Belito in KZN this morning. Everyone has been holding their breath waiting for today, even though none of the threats were confirmed. Well, there is a bit of a shutdown in Gauteng today. There's a combination of EFF and who is it again? Santaco, I think. Yeah, Santaco, the EFF, the National Taxi Association, that are actually going to be protesting in Gauteng. The purpose of the shutdown apparently is a protest against high fuel and food prices. So I don't know if, you know, this. Listen, I understand how people are frustrated about this because none of us want to pay more for food or for fuel. But the reality is this is what happens when the economy is mismanaged, as it has been in South Africa, and when the rest of the world mismanages it, and when Russia invades Ukraine. So who are you protesting against? Vladimir Putin? Joe Biden? Cyril Ramaphosa? Why shut down the country for everyone else on a Friday morning when we all have things to do? Because you are angry with the president of the United States of America or of Russia. It's just, it beggars belief because it shows you just how disconnected Santaco, the EFF, and the National Taxi Association are from how money works in the world. And that it's not a bunch of politicians, although all of those three groups think that if they were in charge, they would be able to control this. They just don't seem to have any grip on the economy at all. I also had something boring to do yesterday. I went to a homeowner's AGM, which is something, I mean, I try to avoid this stuff like the plague, but they strong-armed me into it the other day. I've got a neighbor who I really like, and he said to me, you have to come. So I went straight from all of this, you know, embassy stuff to this boring fucking meeting where I had to sit. And listen, again, you know, usually the people who run these things, the directors on these boards, God bless them, because they're volunteers. They don't get paid to do it. And they get voted in. They have to run things for a year. It's a horrible job. It's thankless. Everybody else in the neighborhood blames them for everything that they don't like. They give them no credit for the things that they do like. It's a thankless, horrible job. Do not ever stand as a director of your board or your, what do they call them? It's either a body corporate or a homeowners association. But, ay, 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 we need more Karens. I need 10 Karens in my neighborhood because obviously we don't have enough. They're none of them standing for election. And I mean, I always say, and Pumi also said this the other day, we need these busybodies in amongst us to do these things. No one wants to do it, right? No one feels like this, but it has to be done. So Ruth saying that relations have never been better between Israel and other countries. If anyone says Israel's an apartheid state, I say you have never been to Israel, because the truth is you have to go and see for yourself. Absolutely. Parallel Parking says, eat a hot chili first thing in the morning and you will clear that nose immediately. Plus you wake up damn fast. No, I'm not going to be doing that. It is so hot in Cape Town, it's hard to cover up with a blanket while sleeping. Sure, Sanele. You got problems, hey? Wow. Thanks for rubbing our noses in it when the rest of the country is so freezing cold. Eek. Imagine the Free State right now. Brr. By the way, Michael says, Gareth, you should touch on the war that was between Israel and Egypt and how they won. It's such a cool story. Well, I mean, but what I think we should do one morning is get a historian on to tell the story of Israel, because I know I'm often attacked. I have received, you know, some very bizarre threats from people in the past for being a supporter of Israel. But I'll tell you something, that the history of that country is fascinating. And you're quite right, Michael, especially the foundation of the country, how it all started and how Israel pretty much had to, as soon as people had started to arrive there, those people were put immediately into uniform, given guns and said, and told, we could be attacked at any time. You know, there was an existential crisis from day one, and pretty much all their neighbors ganged up on them. And they did that on the most holy day of the Jewish calendar, and they survived. Not only did they survive, they beat back their enemies to way beyond their borders, meaning that technically they conquered more country, more territory than they originally had demarcated for them. And, you know, there's a whole lot of contention about some of those areas to this very day, but it's very interesting. So here's something bizarre. I don't know what this means. EP says, Gareth, if you start applying MFR to your glutes and your lower back, all the gunk will come out. What? The MFR? The fuck is that, EP47? Sounds terrible. Herman Mashaba is an out-and-out capitalist, says Carl. It would be nice if he had more sway and knocked those socialist bastards out of power. I agree. I like Herman Mashaba very much. That's why I've had him on the show as many times as I have. On News 24, it says that Santaco have distanced themselves from the protests, says Carl also. Okay, well, great, because I don't see how they're going to help. Corona's boring and... EP47 and Do the Alien Thing. Have you heard Joe Rogan's conversation with Michio Kaku recently? I saw someone on my social media who was raving about that. Michio Kaku is fascinating because he is a physicist and he talks in very simple terms about very complex scientific things. For example, the one that everybody seems to cite as their, you know, their kind of extreme version of knowledge, even though very few people can actually explain to you what the whole thing is they start talking about string theory. And the best explanation I've ever heard for string theory is from Michio Kaku. So I'll be listening to that one. EP47 also says, I want to go to Jerusalem. Me too. I've never been to Israel. I'm desperate to go. Venetia says, Juffrou Rottenmeier in our complex is amazing. She will do everything with a smile while being a super Karen. We need those people. Tracy says, estate politics and AGMs are the one thing I don't miss about living in an estate. It was lovely at the time, but yes, as pettiness and bickering does get tired after a while. I just think, you know, Tracy, believe me, I wouldn't want to live in an estate in an ideal world. I just think that if you live in a body corporate or you live in a complex or you live in an estate, it's a security thing. That's really all it is. I mean, I don't want to think about that stuff every day. I don't want to be on high alert morning, noon, and night thinking about whether or not someone's going to burst in through the door or steal something or whatever else. That's the only reason. It's that simple. I have no emotional connection to the idea at all. And I don't care about belonging to something or going through a boom gate or any of that shit. If it's safe, I'm in. That's all. And other than that, I don't think about it at all every single day. I mean, I just get on with my life. And luckily for me, I've got one set of neighbors on the one side who are really cool, who I get along with quite well. On the other side, they kind of keep to themselves and I keep to myself. But we get on fine too. And as for the rest, they seem cool. it's not really, I don't think about it every day, you know. There are people in the world who connect and make sure that they know who their neighbors are. I'm just not, I don't think I'm one of those people. Myofascial release. What the fuck is that, EP47? Is it like a massage? I imagine that's a massage. And if you're talking about the glutes, you're talking about ass massage. So, okay. All right. Very good. Congo Chris says, Gareth, be the change you want to see in the world. Become the Karen that you need. You already have the haircut. You reckon this is a Karen haircut? Thanks. Thanks very much. Nico says, why is everyone going on about the cold? Like Nina said on Instagram, it's cold from May to October and always has been. Get used to it. Yeah, I mean, we do this. It's what you do. You say, ooh, it's cold, or you say, oh, it was hot. People just do it. It's what they talk about. It's also how you break the ice with people. Literally, in this case, break the ice. Weren't we in Jerusalem during COVID lockdown doing the song and dance? You guys want to go there again? Damn. Yeah, that Jerusalem, I actually saw, I think her name is Nomcebo. I saw her singing it live in Cape Town about 3 months ago, 2 months ago. And she is fantastic. She's got this group of dancers, three or four dancers who dance with her. Yo, they come out and they move, man. I just wish, you know, if I have any regrets, I wish I could dance like that. That would be quite cool to do. Lots of other comments coming in. I've got a few other things that I want to put on the agenda for this morning, but we've got headlines coming up. Let's take a look at some of those quickly, just so we can be informed. First things first. Oh, where do we begin? Hang on. I've got the wrong headlines here. I've got like 2 days ago's headlines. That's not going to help anybody. All right. So first thing, Prince William was spotted selling the big issue in central London. This is weird. What a weird story. The Duke of Cambridge had been spotted in central London, quietly helping sell big issue magazines. A retired Met Police chairperson, Superintendent Matthew Gardner, shared photos of Prince William in Rochester Row in Westminster on his social media account. He said his brother-in-law had seen what he thought was a celebrity and took a distanced photo. Prince William then crossed the road and spoke to Mr. Hannant while wearing the iconic blue issue uniform. The big issue, sorry, not blue issue, big issue is sold by homeless people, long-term unemployed people, and those who need to avoid getting into debt. Vendors are given free magazines, which are then sold to the public for £3, with additional copies bought for £1.50. So I don't know why he was doing this, but maybe he's run out of money. You know, maybe that's what he's done. He's just run out of cash. Oh, my God, I'm sick of this. I hate winter so fucking much. So apparently the 47-year-old, not Prince William, he's a little bit younger than that, but this Mr. Hannant, who's a property manager, said he was on his way back to the office when he spotted Prince William among a small group of people in the street. He said he was so friendly. It was amazing. It struck me that we've just got through a massive jubilee, and days later, he's out there supporting a charity like Big Issue. So well done to Prince William. If he's just doing this to kind of understand what people go through when they're trying to sell magazines, great. You know, helping the homeless, connecting to the people, that's all very good. And I don't see anything wrong with it. You can criticize him. You can say, oh, well, it's just a stunt. But then don't politicians do that all the time? And Prince William isn't looking for your vote. You know, he may look for PR opportunities from time to time, but I don't see a problem with that. Also, are you going to put on the stupid red uniform that they have to wear when they sell that magazine and go and sell this among homeless people in Westminster? I'm not going to. So good for Prince William. In other news, Lil Nas X has been ranting and raving about not getting a nod for the BET Awards. last week, they announced the nominations for the year's award ceremony, and Lil Nas X didn't receive a single nomination. Ooh, the Montero hitmaker was not impressed with the network BET, which is supposed to celebrate black excellence, and they've snubbed him for 2 years in a row. Last year, he was invited to perform at the awards without a nomination. Taking to Twitter, he expressed his frustration and accused the channel of not supporting black gay people. I suppose if your whole world is wrapped up in your identity of being black and gay, then you always see things where you don't win as being anti-black and anti-gay, but maybe they just don't like you, Lil Nas X. Have you ever thought about that? I always wonder about people. Like if you don't like me, My first thought is, well, maybe I've been a shit to you. Maybe I've done something horrible. Maybe I was rude to you once. Maybe I ignored you when you were talking to me. Maybe I said something once on the show that pissed you off. I don't immediately go, oh, it must be because you hate straight white people. Imagine if I went through life like that. I mean, little Nas X is in for a world of pain if that's how he thinks about things. And sure, there are people who do probably hate little Nas X because he's black and gay. I'm sure there are. But if that's your default position, if it isn't first personal accountability, like maybe I'm a shit, you're missing the point, I think. Anyway, a lot of other people here in the comments. Come on, Gareth, get with your rhythm-filled team and dance the Jerusalem. It's a line dance. Even you can learn it. Forget it, Wendy. I can't do that. It's not something I could do. Forget it. Congo Chris says, maybe if Little Nas X spent less time moaning, he could have written some better songs. That's a good point. And maybe he should realize, says Carl, he was a one-hit wonder. Didn't Little Nas X win a Grammy 3 months ago? Isn't that the holy grail in music? What's he bitching about? He did. He won a Grammy. But, you know, this is all you live for. Once you are addicted to the fame and the attention that you get from an award like this, that's all you can do, is you keep looking for more. So this is typical, and I don't actually feel sorry for him at all. Where, as I usually say on the show when people start moaning like this, where? So Comair are going to be liquidated. Oh, boy. I don't know if you've been paying attention to this. I haven't really, but struggling aviation company Comair will be liquidated. The company that operates Kalula and British Airways in South Africa failed to secure funding to continue operating. Comair's business rescue practitioners say there is no reasonable prospect that the company can be rescued. You know, before we climb into Comair and their behavior over the last week, where they really dropped people in the shit and people couldn't, the last couple of weeks, people couldn't catch flights that they'd booked. They owe a whole lot of people money. Can we just, for a moment, consider how difficult it must be to run an airline? I mean, I'm not going to feel sorry for them, but if you're going to get into that business, your margins are so tight. You have to operate knowing what the international oil price is and how that can fluctuate up and down. You have to rely on filling planes up. There's all the complex stuff around marketing, around, you know, airports themselves, how you manage your routes, what it costs you to fly from A to B. You do not want to get into airlines unless you really know your business. That is a tough, tough operation to run. So whether or not you're a fan of Comair, they're out of business. They're going to be liquidated. And that is the latest on them. Hey, Ben, good morning.
Hey, Gareth, how's it going?
Good. What's happening? Nice to see you.
Well, yeah, you too. So you know what's happened to Comair? Sorry, I'm catching the back end of the story here, but this is what should have happened to SAA.
Yes.
The shit hit the fan.
Right.
And then you cover an excrement. SAA went through this so many different times where they just kept getting our money to... So yeah, I mean, like, obviously it's terrible
to bail them out,
drop people, but this is actually what was meant to happen to businesses when they go bad. And it's very sad, but it's also sad that, like, it happens to them. Whereas there's SAA, like, just went through years and years and years of not happening to them.
Well, this is, you know, that's we gave special protections to SAA, and really, the airline business is tough. Not everyone's going to win. And as Doug Stanhope, your favorite and my favorite comedian, often says, it's like going into battle. Not all of us will be here at the end, you know?
Sure. If you want to get an insight into how tough airlines really are, Richard Branson's, I think, first autobiography talks a lot about that.
Yeah.
You know, for him, it was like, it was part of his marketing machine to have Virgin. It was like sexy to have an airline.
Right.
But every single week, you are literally flying by the seat of your pants. Every single thing is conspiring against you. Every single thing is stressful. And, you know, we often take it for granted. We get into this little can. We fly a couple of hours. We get out the other side. It's hard as hell.
Couldn't agree more. I wouldn't want to run an airline. I think that's probably one of the toughest jobs. Look, anything in the air is a tough job. I've always thought, like, air traffic control has got to be the most stressful job in the world. But my erstwhile brother-in-law is a pilot for the airlines, and he works fucking hard. I mean, he wakes up at like 3 in the morning, and then he gets given 3 routes for the day. And I think I would be exhausted to get home at 8 o'clock at night after being up at 3 in the morning. You know, it's tough work. I don't know if I could do that.
Well, it is, because you also got to be so diligent. It's not like an Uber driver.
No.
Like, no disrespect to them.
No.
But they get into their car, they turn the car on. your brother-in-law has to do a myriad of safety checks. He has the responsibilities that are so much higher. And you can't have bad days, huh?
No, you can't.
We've all had bad days.
You also can't, sleep in your car like an Uber driver, you know? And then the whole car smells it. Imagine if pilots slept in the plane and the whole plane smelt like they'd slept in it, which is how Ubers smell.
Yeah, and then you get into the plane and the guy's literally taking like Steers packages out of the footwell. It's like, sorry, give me a second.
You find that Steers seasoning salt on the floor in the footwell.
Yeah, but you can't get that out of a car here. Yeah. You've got to be so selective what you put into a car, and unfortunately, fast food fumes, together with 4 to 6 hours of heavy breathing.
Yeah.
With closed windows. Yeah.
Winter.
Let's stop it right there.
Yeah. Winter Ubers and summer Ubers have very different experiences, but winter Ubers tend to be a little more smelly.
Just it's a different atmosphere.
Way. It's a literally. It's heady. Let's just put it that way. All right. So a couple of things that we've got to talk to Ben about this morning. What is going on in golf? Because I see the Saudis have launched their own kind of tournament stroke PGA stroke whatever it might be, and a whole lot of people have joined the Saudis, and they're all taking part in this because obviously the Saudis have just got tons of money, so they're throwing money at this. And is this good for golf, Ben, or should we be upset, or should we be purists and say, oh well, they're ruining this gentleman's game by throwing money at things? What is going on?
Yeah, there's a lot of talking points here, obviously, and then there's the moral high grounds, which we'll get into in a second. It's absolutely great for golf because it's something new and it's something different. And even if it is crap, that new and something different allows the traditional to become better, and it allows sort of latitude to happen within the sport that might not have happened already. So there's the DP World Tour, which is obviously the ex-European Tour, which is amazing because they literally go around the world.
Yeah.
There's the PGA Tour, which is the best because it's got the most money, mm-hmm. and it's got the best players, and it's America-based. So people always aspire to be there because if you are a golfer and you're based in America, life becomes a lot better. You know, you get mm-hmm. to obviously marry a much hotter woman. You get to be in
part
the
of
same
it.
Country.
Is that actually written? That's written into the terms and conditions of the PGA, right?
Well, as a golfer, ultimately, you're looking to win trophies and get a trophy wife. So, I mean, America brings all of that together so much better. Hmm. And then you're in the country where majors are played. So preparation time, acclimatization, the courses is so much better. I mean, Gary Player, who, as you know, grew up very poor, he had to catch 17 planes with 14 children to go to a major. So by the time he got there, he was knackered. And he still ended up winning 9 majors and 9 senior majors. So he would have won 43 if he was based in America, as we know. I mean, look, I'm not saying anything new here.
Gary said this himself a million times.
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah, because he would have been the absolute greatest. So that is where golf is right now. When you're the best of the best, those are your two options. Well, I say your two options. Basically, you're on the European Tour until you can make it to the PGA Tour, DP World Tour.
Right.
So what the Saudis are doing is like, well, we like golf. We've built a couple of golf courses. Golf is rich. We're rich. Yeah, let's give it a crack. Who wants what, basically? So they literally, I think, hired a company where creative designers are about 11 or 12 years old. They probably just left the mother's care for a day-to-day basis. Everything looks very cheap. It looks very shit and very put together at the last moment, and they've just learned Photoshop. The courses they're playing at are absolutely amazing. The money that they are offering players is sensational. Before we get into that, we'll talk about the format. What they want to do is they want to have 8 tournaments. That's all they want, just 8 tournaments. And then, because golfers essentially are free agents, they play on these tours, but they don't get like salaries, whatever. Even the best of the best can make zero on a weekly basis or a string of zeros. So they were like, well, sorry.
All right, don't worry. I had a sneeze just now, so it's all great.
They were looking to basically, not contract, but get together like 40, 50, 60 kind of golfers and say, look, guys, there is guaranteed money on every single event. So instead of going to a golf tournament, you play 2 rounds, you play like shit, you go home with no money. You will play 3 rounds, there is no cut, you will make money. So one of the greatest things about being a Sunshine Tour professional is you can win the Sunshine Tour Order of Merit, which then allows you into a WGC event. That is a World Golf Championship. And if you finish last there, you get $100,000. Hooray, which is great.
Wow, okay.
If you finish last at one of these Saudi events, you get $125,000. So work that out on exchange rate. There's no surprise why a lot of South African golfers, the ones that were offered, have actually gone to this thing.
Sure.
So that's really cool.
So which of our players, Charles Schwartzel, who else?
Basically.
Don't worry, Ben. I was. You should have heard me like 15 minutes ago. Don't worry. We're all deteriorating.
So basically all the best South African golfers except for Christian Bezuidenhout have gone. So Schwartzel, Louis Oosthuizen, Brandon Grace, Justin Harding, Chris Norris, Henny Duplessis. There's quite a few in there. And they're getting guaranteed cash, which is great. And they want to have a team format. So they want to have a team format. So every single tournament, the players get put into the strange IPL sort of auction thing. And then you're playing individually, but you also play as part of a team. And these teams have been given predictably shitty names.
All right, but so all of this is good. I mean, you know I don't care enough about golf. The reason I brought this up is because the media, the stupid media, have got...
I was just giving the background there. Yeah, I'm totally done with background.
I know, but this is the part that I'm really interested in, is the media have decided that Saudi equals bad, but anyone else equals good. And you know, if the media decides, like for example, they've decided Ukraine equals good, Russia equals bad, so everything's very binary for them. And a lot of journalists are really, really stupid. So I heard there was a press conference this week. This is where it gets interesting. And they were trying to trap these golfers into saying things that would get them into trouble with the Saudis, whose money they're now playing for.
Yeah, there is no easier target as a media person than a middle-aged white man sitting in golf clothes with cameras on him.
Oh, that everyone hates them, right? Everyone hates them.
Oh, I mean, how dare you? And the thing about that journalists, and people won't point this out, but journalists are poor, right? Fundamentally, they do not know what money is. They do not know what the smell of a Ferrari interior is.
No.
They do not know what the soft touch of the backseat of a Rolls Royce is. They'll never know these kind of things.
Which is why journalists are always more interested in reporting on rich people than they are in poor people. And it's why they always seem confounded and confused. The moment anyone speaks about anything to do with like profit and loss, a balance sheet, debit, credit, the minute you talk about anything to do with money, economics, for example, unless you're an economics reporter, a different breed of person, they don't understand a goddamn thing about this, because journalists earn somewhere between, if they're lucky, 4 and 10 grand a month. Even the best ones, just a little bit more than that. So they don't understand money. So when they're talking to people who are clearly earning more than them, they're first of all filled with resentment and bitterness.
Hugely.
And you can hear that in the questions that they ask straight away. Second of all, they're obsessed with money because they don't have any. Obsessed with it. And third of all, they just don't understand the dynamics of this. So someone's talking about, you know, millions of money and millions of rands or dollars or dirhams or whatever in prize money. And it blows their heads up. You can hear them short circuiting in the seats.
Well, okay. So yes, all of that I agree. And no one's talking about that. So I think we should really start with that. Journalists they all have these romantic ideals and they're all so principled.
Yeah.
But it's easy to be principled when no one's offering you anything. These golfers get offered all kinds of cash, women at their door, fast cars, all these kind of things. But yet, and then they're seen as the bad guys. Well, hang on a second. Try live a day in their shoes. And this is what I also hate about these people with their stupid fucking problems, is that they never understand that life doesn't get easier when you get rich. It's just different, and it's also pretty hard. So yes, these guys have made huge amounts of money. Why are they going to a tour where they make even more money? Well, because that's just their life, right?
It's business.
Kind of things.
It's business.
It's business. Now, I know it's extreme. So everyone was like, well, they were already set for life. And you would be right. So Dustin Johnson, he is the biggest name in this thing. Mm-hmm. He's already made, I think, like 80 million on the PGA Tour.
Good 80 for him.
Million, okay. So, amazing. Good for him. You can't spend that. You can't do anything with it. He then has gone to this thing. This is the weirdest stat. Tiger Woods, the greatest golfer ever, okay?
Right.
And he was a great golfer when there was money in the sport, unlike Gary. the Saudi people have offered Dustin Johnson just to go and play in this tournament, right?
Right.
Separate to what he's going to win. Just to go and play, they've offered him the same amount of money that Tiger Woods made by being the best golfer in his entire career, prize money.
Jesus.
They said, here's $215 million
Wow.
just to be here and just to be associated with this and resign from the PGA Tour.
Phenomenal.
So he's gone, cool, I'm in. And then he said, and this is what gets all the people really upset, he said, I'm doing this because I want this for my future, and this is the best decision for my family. Mm-hmm. So everyone's going, bullshit. It's just the money. It's like, obviously, it's just the money. And then people, and then these journalists, they go further to say, where wouldn't you play? Would you have played in apartheid South Africa? Would you play
North Korea
tournament right now? And all of it is like, well, dude, obviously they're there for the money. So, and these golfers are trying to be very diplomatic. You know, they're trying to say, well, you know.
Well, someone's coached them. Some shitty media.
Well, badly.
Some media presentation coach has got hold of them, and they've said, well, if this question comes up, just say, I don't want to deal with a hypothetical.
Yes, completely. So they're basically looking like naughty schoolboys trying to evade questions rather badly. And I just wish that they would turn it around, because these journalists, and they're having a massive go about the fact that, you know, Saudis killed journalists, which is quite funny.
Well, there was that one Khashoggi thing where they cut him up, put him in a suitcase. I mean, you know, what are you going to get all sensitive about the one? I mean, really?
Well, these guys are pretty brazen on the back of that, though. So they're bringing up all these things, which is very obvious.
Yes.
It's like, you know, how dare you take this money? And again, you just want to break it down. Okay, cool, guys. Let's just say you're right. So after this, are you going to go to the Saudi Grand Prix? And are you going to basically pour paint all over the press conference? Are you going to, like, find Hillary Clinton and ask her where all her money came from for her stupid campaigns? Like, I know there's the whole, like, what-ism.
What about-ism,
What about-ism, sorry. It's a natural thing.
Yeah.
But, like, it just stinks of, like, theatrical nonsense that you're taking on these golfers for wanting to make more money. And, yes, they were already rich, and now they are stupidly rich. It's also their deal. Like, that's their thing. Who decides who has the dirtiest money? Because it's funny how people don't say this about China. It's funny how certain parts of America are pretty dodgy. There's some companies there that sponsor events. No one's saying no to their money.
No,
it's this moral high horse.
It's such theory,
which is absolute bullshit.
It is
but
bullshit.
But also just.
But I mean, and people.
I would love for the Saudis.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, Karen.
No. You'd love the Saudis to what?
I would love for the Saudis, just to basically go to these journalists and say, "Look here, you dipshits. Here's $5 million." And then I want to see how loud they are. And I know that what I'm saying here is wrong, because basically I'm talking about corruption and I'm endorsing it. But they are having a field day on these golfers, and they know the answer, and they've never known what real money is. So how can they ever – like, I just believe that in life you're always going to be compassionate to some sort of cause. You can't just be so – you can't just be like this wrecking ball of nonsense.
Well, Ben –
that's what these guys are. They're coming across like that.
But this is also the problem with the world, right, is that people decide that their moral – line is here. Like, let's say, for example, that you've decided that Vladimir Putin invading the Ukraine is where you draw the line. Then everybody up to that line is acceptable. Everybody on the other side of it is no longer acceptable. For some people, it has to do with money. So if someone is rich, they must have stolen that from someone else. They must have made that off someone else's labor. It's very unfair, so rich people be damned. Some people say racism is their thing. So if you can detect even the tiniest amount of racism in somebody, then you can say you're better than them, and you can dismiss them completely. And whatever your line is, that's where people start to feel morally superior. And it's just nonsense. All of it is totally subjective. All of it is it has nothing to do with your morality. There are very, very good people who are not perfect, and there are very, very bad people who are close to being more moral than anyone else among us. But they're still bad in some way because maybe, I don't know, they lie to their spouse, or, you know, they mismatch their socks when they get dressed in the morning. Who knows what people's moral inclination might be? But it is ridiculous to say that if you wave $200 million in front of somebody, that they're not going to take it. And if they do take it, they must be a bad person. It's outrageous.
It is outrageous. Look, there's a couple of other things that are post-golf with me on this, is that everyone's got a number, everyone's got a price.
Sure.
And And as much as, like, you know, you look at this country and how corruption is basically a cancer which is ruining South Africa, and it's ruining Africa in many ways, but corruption is also human nature. So we can't think it's not going to happen, and we can't think that we aren't inclined to become part of it. But it's like, again, it's just, as you say, people decide this and they have this, like, virtuous high ground that they think they're claiming. I would just love, for entertainment purposes, for these golfers just to say, well, yeah, I've got 4 Ferraris, but this other guy that I really hate's got 8. So would I get that 9th Ferrari? Fuck him. And I want to hear that from the golfers. I don't want to hear this crap about, you know, well, Saudis have made some mistakes, and I think that we have an opportunity to try help them usher in a new dawn and era. But it's like, fuck off.
But it's like, for example, when someone attacks you on social media, that most of us, because we have good manners and we were raised properly, our inclination is to apologize, to say, hey, listen, let's sit down and talk about this. Whether it, you know, whether it's just something silly someone's saying, or whether it's something that's genuinely offensive, or if you just don't like somebody, which is the case for most people who say things on social media. You know, they don't really care. It's just they're lashing out because they've got a miserable home life themselves. Anyway, the inclination is, and you were raised like this, Ben. I know I certainly was. I think most of the people who listened to our show were. That you, when you are in a conflict situation with someone, you try to find a way out of it, and you apologize, and you reconcile, you find common ground, you negotiate a peace between you and the other person, and you try to be as friendly as possible, because you look at that person, you say, well, you're a person just like me, let's treat each other properly, right? That's respectable, and that shows a level of decency. The problem,
it's gentlemanlike.
Yeah, the problem is. That's not how these people who lash out like this, how they should be treated, whether they're journalists or whether they're ordinary members of the public or whether they're rich celebrities or assholes. You know, they're people at all levels of society that don't know how to behave. I say the way to deal with those people is to attack them back, because some people just do not accept and understand a compliment or an apology. So there's no point in trying to be nice to them. What you have to do with those people is say, actually, fuck you. I mean, like, wouldn't it be great if a golfer said at one of these conferences, and they never will, because again, they've been trained and coached into saying the same boring thing all the time, which is why you're the only person who picked up anything controversial in that press conference. The rest would go, because they would have paid no attention. The way to do this is for that golfer, ideally, in a world where they're like Elon Musk and they don't care, and maybe this is what really being rich gives you, and maybe one day these golfers will be able to talk like this. You say, what kind of question is that? You're just unhappy, resentful, and bitter about the fact that I'm about to be paid $200 million to hit a ball around, and you have to get into your many-pocketed journalist jacket and go out into war zones to try and get a 2/1,000,000th of the money that I'm going to get for playing on beautiful green grass and being fated for being a great golfer my whole life. You're going to put yourself in the way of bullets, and you won't ever make as much money or be as famous as I am. And that's why you're asking me the question. Shut your pie hole. Here's $5,000. Fuck off.
Look, I still believe there's a great role for journalism and journalists, because they uncover things and they've got a perfect reason to be in media and society. I get that. I really do. And I appreciate the hard work that some of them do, not that there are many left. But I also believe your original question to me was, is this good for the golf? I think it could be amazing, because a lot of things that stop these people from saying things like that is the fact that they've got like a brand on their hat, on their shirt.
Sure.
So they're ambassadors to these things. So therefore they speak certainly.
I have to be careful.
If you've just been given all these extra millions, why do you want sponsors? Why would you have to worry about sponsors? Go to some corporate day where you've got to talk to some middle management guy, laugh at his shit jokes while he gets onto the first tee with you. Fuck that. This thing has the ability to now make golfers completely free entities, completely free agents, and to not have any sponsors. You don't like those clubs? I don't care. I'm going to use these clubs. I think my driver's shit? Cool. I'm going to go buy that one. Become free agents in every sense, and then I want to see what this tour can do. And then, like, it'd be amazing. Guys will be having beers in the course. They'll be doing whatever they want to do.
It'll be more fun. It'll be more fun to watch. That's for sure.
That would be great. So the absolute sportist in me, this is why I care about this. Yes, people die in Saudi Arabia. Yes, people die in China every single day too, for no good reason. People die all over the world. Sure. People are oppressed all over the world.
Didn't Gary Player build those courses for the Myanmar junta all those years ago, and he got into shit for that?
Well, Gareth, they needed some recreation. Let's not get too hasty on the judgment there. The point is that we are all complete and utterly flawed. We shouldn't be harming children, yeah, which is always my motto in life. And then I think we can all just play and get on with life.
Well, what do you...
I love the fact that they want to do these things, but I've no idea how it's going to sustain because, yeah.
Well, here Jamie says, to understand the situation with Saudi golf, you must first understand how the PGA Tour works. It's not like the Premier League, NBA, or any other professional sport. And she goes on to say a little bit later on that it is basically about the money. And that's fine. What's wrong with that? EP47 says, Ernie Els, Wine Estates in Stellenbosch. I could sit there forever. Great place to read about South African golf history. Okay. Kim,
cool.
Kim Jong-un, who's a regular listener, says, 100% Ben. I shouldn't do that. That's apparently quite racist. Little bit of competitive corruption, and the PGA throws their toys out of the cot, for fuck's sake. And then people go on to say, Kim Jong-un, glorious leader. Will glorious leader hold the best golf tour and best career? Although I know how glorious leader is at golf. Remember, glorious leader Kim Jong-un, best record ever in golf. Kim Jong-il, his father, played a round of golf, yep, scored no less than three hole-in-ones, and then retired.
Well, actually, I think it was seven, but he's not one to brag.
All right.
Guys, we all live in a weird world with so many different things and options. Like, my question to wrap this up with, Gareth, who wouldn't you take money from? I'll give you my answer. The Chinese government and the ANC. Those are two people I wouldn't take money from.
Maybe also...
Other than that...
Also, I don't know if...
Other than that, let's talk.
I don't know if I'd take money from pedophiles. I don't think I'd like that.
Well, obviously, but pedophiles aren't really a official entity.
They're just not a powerful lobby.
They don't have fucking money. They got no fucking money as well. They're just the dregs of society. So I don't think the pedos are going to get together anytime soon
with their own
rival golf tour.
So you're telling
me... the pedo golf tour.
So if the ANC came to you and said, oh, we've got this golf tournament that we're trying to raise some money for the ANC's election campaign...
Get fucked.
You wouldn't take their money?
No, I just do what I always do with the ANC, just wish herpes upon them and absolute fucking eternity of hell, and carry on with my day.
EP47 says, Ben, look at your blinds. You don't know what money is.
That's a very good point.
Very rude of EP47. Show us your blinds, EP47. Why don't you show us what's under your skirt, motherfucker?
They're not that horrific. They're fucking. It's a tiny blind in the front. There's nothing outside. There's no sun.
No, he's precisely the guy you need to attack back, Ben. I was saying just now. Oh, Kim Jong-un's just corrected us. Seven, Gareth. Seven hole-in-one.
I told you, seven. Mm. Seven.
There we go. Very good.
Amazing, amazing feat.
All right, EP47's laughing, but Yonder says, this is great for golf. I want the Saudis to come and buy South African sport. We could take care of rugby, soccer, cricket, athletics, swimming, netball, hockey, and other small sports. Well, yes, but then we cannot let the same people who are administrators now run it, because they'll just fleece the Saudis. Then we'll be in trouble with them too. We don't need that.
Of course not. Like Yana makes a very good point. I would rather have the people who maybe have a couple of beheadings here and there, rather than the people who are responsible for life as a Dimeni or Marikana to run my sport. You want to get really technical on
good point.
How horrible people are?
Yeah. Because what's horrible to one is not necessarily horrible to another. You know, I was talking to someone from the NPA yesterday, at one of these things that I was at. And I said to this person who will go unnamed, how's your Shamila Batoy? Is she enjoying herself? Has she done anything in the last 5 years? And I started having a little temper tantrum. I was like, you know, in any other country, this person would have resigned out of shame for having done fuck all in their office as public prosecutor, head of the National Directorate of Public Prosecutions. But she continues to languish there, doing absolutely bugger all. You remember there was the famous case of the director, I think of Mattel, I think he was the chair of the board of the CEO. They discovered that there was lead paint on some of their toys and that some kids had sucked the lead paint off. You've got to ask yourself what kind of kid is sucking the lead paint off a toy. You know, maybe it's a bit of Darwinism coming in there. But anyway, this guy was so humiliated and upset and embarrassed by the fact that his company had poisoned children all over the world that he committed hari kiri. He committed suicide. And I said, you know, I'm not saying that this is what Shamila Batoy must do, but there are so many people in this country who, when they're caught with their hands in the till, whether they're ANC, EFF, on the rare occasion a Patricia de Lille or whoever else from one of the smaller parties, then they'll never leave. They'll never leave office voluntarily. They have to be pulled out of there while they try to cling to furniture and paintings as their last kind of parting gift from the office to them. And I just can't help thinking that if more people just had the basic decency to know when their time is up, we wouldn't have such problems in South Africa. Anyway, it's a bit of a pipe dream, I suppose.
Hugely.
All right. So we've bitched and moaned, but I am glad we spoke about sport this morning because we haven't done that for a very long time. And the business of sport, frankly, where the money goes, sport seems to thrive. This is why Formula One is so successful, is because there's so much money in it.
Yeah, exactly. And coming up, obviously, on Cliff Central is my new podcast. This episode's actually all about the money and sport and what's happening.
Fantastic.
There are so many different talking points with the money. I think it's very interesting. And the way it keeps changing, the different role players that want to get into sport for certain reasons. And as people say, the Saudis want to use sport to sport wash their records. Mm. And this is a reality. You know, people do want to get in there. The F1. Like, if you really want to take on someone, take on firstly Lewis Hamilton and his sponsors, or take on F1, because that they go to anybody. I mean, if arms dealer Istan was a country and they put the cash up, everyone will be like, cool, let's have a look at your track.
Well, there are a couple of interesting comments. We've run out of time in this hour, but we've got some time in the next one. We will be joined by our guests, Devel Mark, in a little while as well. But Ben, some SA sport positives from Clint from the Vol. He says, the Proteas didn't embarrass us last night.
Yeah, the Proteas, I think, have turned a corner. They've realized that they run by absolute and utter pieces of crap. And they're taking it onto the field where it most matters.
Good. Good. There's lots more that we'll talk about in a second, but we've got to take a break at 7 o'clock. CliffCentral.com. Friday morning, you've made it to the weekend. Hooray! CliffCentral.com.